welcome back to another episode of the Ricky Henderson Podcast, the greatest of all podcasts, GOAP. Your co-host, Alex Espinoza, with my co-host, Dr. Hal Gordon.
My dog.
Today, we are joined by a special guest. You've been seeing his work blow up the past month or 3 weeks or so. His name is Dan Moore. He's a freelance writer based out of the Bay Area. Dan, how you doing, man? We've got to talk about a couple of your pieces. You had one in the Ringer 3 weeks ago called When Fans Fight Back. It was a great chronicling of everything going on in Oakland. And then recently, this week, had another article about, kind of the racket that private owners are doing with public financing for their stadiums. You can find that in the Atlantic. Dan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it. It's good to be here.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. So I want to talk about, I just want to jump right into this this Atlantic article that you just wrote. And my overall impression that I got reading that is like, maybe like fans are smarter than before, or maybe fans are more aware than it was maybe in the 90s and even in the 2000s. And do you feel like maybe this little never-ending money pit is maybe running out for these private owners? We saw what happened with the vote in Kansas City. Do you feel like maybe something is changing here with the overall landscape as far as public subsidies and for stadiums?
I sure hope so. I think there's a few things going on. Owners tend to make these demands for hundreds of millions of dollars, in some cases billions of dollars in public funding for new stadiums, anytime their lease is up. And so what you see happen is a sort of cycle where every 30 years, which is the general length of the lease that owners will sign with cities and states, every time that's up, they're asking for new public funding. So the last time that this happened really kind of at scale was in the early 90s after the construction and perceived success of Camden Yards. So in that time, a few things have changed. One, as Hal will no doubt attest to as our local economist, mountains of evidence have accumulated refuting the idea that owners and leagues put forth in support of these projects, that stadiums are massive economic generators for cities, that they, are silver bullets. All the evidence suggests that is not true. And so taxpayers in all these places, I think, are both becoming more attuned to that evidence, waking up to the attendant costs related to these projects. And I think that what you're also seeing is a little bit of distaste for the extortion and the threats of relocation by which owners and leagues go about securing these deals. So what you're alluding to is this palpable pushback that fans are like, wait a minute, this feels like a raw deal for us. And it just kind of sucks to live through. Like, maybe there's a better way to do it. And the last thing I'll say is, on top of all that, the value of these sports teams only continues to balloon inexorably. Every owner in the three most heavily subsidized leagues, NHL, NBA, MLB, is a billionaire themselves. And so there's a sense of, why are we doing it this way again? Yeah. So anyway, I hope that that's catching on. And it does, absolutely. There, it does seem like it is a little bit.
Dan, what was, what's your background and how did you end up becoming sort of the chronicler in long form essay form of Oakland A's fans fight for all this kind of stuff?
Man, well, I was born and raised in the East Bay. And so I come to all this as an A's fan, as an Oakland sports fan. And so, I have to check my objectivity continuously because I feel personally wronged by a lot of what's happening. So that's one reason that I am drawn to the story. But more professionally, I'm sort of a failed fiction writer. I studied fiction writing in college. My turn towards journalism started when every MFA program that I applied to rejected me. And so it was sort of like, okay, well, what am I going to do now? And it's sort of been a long road since then. I was editing online magazines, taking whatever work was offered to me. And then about five years ago or so, I started writing for the Oakland side, and I kind of took up a bit of the sports beat there. And it just so happened that it was right around then that all the Howard Terminal stuff was just starting. And as it would happen, this story kind of just picked me up, and I traveled with it. I mean, it, I think if you take a step back, and certainly it's clear from where we're sitting now, I think the story of what has happened to Oakland sports writ large, but what has also happened to A's baseball and to the Oakland A's more specifically, is it's a microcosm of so many things that are both wrong and kind of messed up with the sports industry and the way we relate to it as fans and taxpayers today. But it's also emblematic of certain of those intangible elements that make sports worthwhile. Like if you look at what the fans here have done and that part of the story, kind of the pushback, you know, that's sort of what it's all about. Look at the community that has bloomed in the face of all this, you know, the BS from the A's owners. So, you know, that's kind of a long-winded way of saying that I approached it just as a journalist, but I got really wrapped up in it, and I am genuinely fascinated and inspired by it.
Yeah, that's what I try to keep reminding myself. Like, what's happening right here? I feel like these fans are ultimately going to be remembered in this canon of all these fans that you wrote about in your piece in The Ringer. You know, like I learned a lot of stuff that I didn't know about. I never heard about the Tiger Stadium hug before, and just like reading details about the Save Our Browns and all that stuff. And do you feel like what A's are doing here will, you know, leave a legacy, whether they, no matter where the A's end up, do you feel like, you know, what the A's are, the fans are doing here, like even how it was on TV last week with in Baltimore with the flag and stuff like that. I mean, do you feel like the cell movement is going to be remembered in that canon that you described there?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's already been, you know, memorialized in the Hall of Fame. You know, if you go back to the reverse boycott last year, but I think more genuinely, you know, or generally, if you think of what we were just talking about, how these subsidies and the, you know, the demands that are placed on fans, that happens every 30 years or so, right? Talk to sports economists. They all tell you we are on the brink of a huge stadium subsidy and extortion boom all over pro sports. So that means fan bases are going to be extorted all over pro sports in precisely the manner, in some cases, that A's fans have been. So what I think and what I hope will be the legacy of A's fans will be sort of carried on by other fan bases who look to the way that the 68s and Last Dive Bar and Hal have organized in the face of that. And the legacy will be, I think, in their success, right? Like if they employ some of these tactics to raise awareness of what's happening and push back against it, you could see maybe a culture change, a paradigm shift. And I bet a lot of that can be traced back at least to the sentiment and the model that's been offered here in Oakland.
What if you're, you know, I think it's really interesting to hear what the national perspective of this is like. So like what have your sort of editors, when you've put in these stories, and, you know, you're recently in the Atlantic for a kind of a short piece about just stadium financing in general, which like, that's pretty sick. That's a great, that's a real big, that's like a real publication, not just an internet publication, you know? So like, what have, you know, you know, when you've pitched stories about this or brought stories to editors at these national publications, The Ringer, The Atlantic, maybe other places, like, you know, what are they interested in? What's their perspective been like?
Well, you know, one thing, everybody is interested in the story of what has happened to Oakland as a city at the hands of pro sports, right? Like it is at once unprecedented in sports history for a major league city, Oakland, California, in this case, to go from being one of the mightiest in my sense, most representative sports towns in America to have been denuded entirely of its sports teams, right? To lose three institutions in a manner or in a time span of less than 10 years. I mean, that's never happened before. At the same time, the way that it's happened, as I mentioned earlier, is, I think, emblematic of a lot of sort of the more pernicious elements of the sports industry. And so there's both a lot to kind of gawk at, like, oh my God, look at this. How did this happen? And then there's a lot to learn from it, right? It's a model in more ways than one. So I think there is something inherently and broadly interesting about that, for sure. I'll also say that there's a sense that transcends region about, like, oh, this kind of stuff could happen elsewhere. It will happen elsewhere. And so I think, you know, several years ago, I was sort of waking up to this, like when the parallel paths and all those things were announced here in Oakland, I was like, I think that there's something larger happening here. It took a little while, but I think more and more, and by the way, at the hand and by the work that A's fans have put in, there's been an awakening to a lot of this stuff. And they've done a lot of work raising sort of the national consciousness of it, if you will. But now everybody is, you know, kind of looking to what's happening here as a vanguard sort of what hopefully is a shift. So anyway, I think that there's a lot of interest in that beyond Oakland too.
And Dan, were you tapped into like the Nevada legislators when they were, you know, talking about the Senate Bill 1 and they kind of jammed it through in that special session? Were you tapped into that? And what did you think about the way that went down? And especially now, it seems like stuff is up in the air. You know, the Las Vegas Review-Journal this week, they just said, oh, it might not be in this corner of the lot. It might be somewhere else in the lot. And everything's still kind of up in the air. And Fisher still doesn't have financing. I'm kind of, what's your read on the situation of Vegas and kind of how it all went down over there, you know?
Well, I was tapped into it likely in the same way you guys were, you know, from our vantage in Oakland, our vantage that was sort of probably at once disbelieving and like kind of aghast watching it all happen. I think my read on it is that's it, how that bill was passed is also indicative of lots of shitty things that about how sports operate and about how these deals are done. I mean, the fact that these politicians were just bought off by A's executives, including, you know, I'm forgetting the name of the representative now, but representatives who stood and acted tough on the floor. And who were, you know, challenging Cavill. It turns out all it took was $10,000 to a $10,000 donation campaign donation to sway him, to persuade him to go back on that. So, you know, I think it's, I followed it from the vantage of a fan. Of course, I was writing something about it at the time. But looking back on it now, I mean, there's a lot to be learned from that too. I think that if you look at a lot of these stadium deals, a lot of these public financing deals throughout history, certainly over the last 30, 40 years, you're going to see a lot of, you know, backroom deals, a lot of this kind of stuff happening, even in the face of politicians, or rather probably aided by politicians who don't really know what it is that they are voting for, right? We saw that happen on social media, or that come to light on social media earlier this year.
Yeah.
We don't need to get into that.
No,
but
we talked about that already.
yeah, there you go. You know, it's just, it shines a light on how this stuff happens. And in this case, it was, I think, frankly, pretty gross and disheartening.
My read of the Doñate situation had always been that, you know, it's this guy who knows he's supposed to be standing up and being tough to billionaires, to making sure that they're not screwing them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in sort of two ways, like one way, the really the only way to be tough is to tell them no, and he doesn't want to tell them no. And then the other way is that, like, he, you know, government is outmatched in a lot of ways here, you know, where the billionaires have a lot of money to pay for lobbyists, and they have a lot of money to pay for consultants, and they have a lot of money for people to write these bills. And in some places, like Oakland, there is, you know, legislatures have a lot of resources and power and advisors to help them out make these decisions. But in a lot of other places, like the state of Nevada, you know, Senator Doñate, he doesn't have a staff. He doesn't like have anybody there to tell him what to be. So I think he just sort of picked a thing and was like, I'm going to look tough. And then I don't think it had anything to do with the donation. I think they had 11 lobbyists on the floor, and seven of them, you know, cornered him and was like, here's why you're wrong to be mad about that. And don't worry, we have these eight consultants over here who say you're getting an amazing deal. And there's nobody in the room there to say, hey, right now the actual thinking is this is not big money.
I would add to that real quick, to your point, they also have passed what, I mean, it was the end of a session that they had
just wanted to go,
you know,
home.
They just wanted to go home at that
and then
point.
There was like a weekend in between sessions or something, and that's kind of when things changed.
It was,
like the
it was also during the
change from the before and after that weekend too.
It was during the Stanley Cup.
And they were winning,
which is his district. Anyway,
no, and so that's a really good point now, and I think it's an important thing to remember too, is that these representatives are people outmatched by the billionaires and their lobbyists, who were also, you know, probably exhausted from, you know, all this was like what the number of bills that they had passed before then, or the number of, you know, things that they had looked at, numbered in the hundreds, if not thousands, right? So
they got to go year round. I don't understand why they're not.
And it's a huge
round.
Amount of money.
It's 2024. Yeah. Well, how are they still meeting twice, like 3 months every 2 years? I don't understand.
A lot of states are like that, Alex.
That's what's kind of opening my eye too. Yeah. And then
even, you know, Texas, which is the second largest state and economy in the country, Texas is like that as well.
That's wild.
I think it goes back to this sort of this ethos of the citizen legislature, you know, like the House of Burgesses in Virginia, where, like, you know, once every 5 years, the sons of the biggest plantation owners in Virginia would get in their carriages and travel down to wherever the hell they met. I don't think it was Richmond, you know, wherever, I think it's like
Charleston,
Williamsburg or something, you know, like colonial, right? They would travel down there and then have a debate and then wouldn't see each other for 5 years again. But, you know, one thing I really want to make sure that we asked you about too, in just reading your paper in the, or your article in the Atlantic, can you explain to us the thing with municipal bonds? You know, I've seen that a lot, and it's, I think what's important about the municipal bonds thing is it's something reasonable that the federal government could do. You know, like I would love the federal government to pass a law that says you can't move sports teams. We're mandating promotion or relegation. Ain't gonna happen. But, you know, and also I know a lot of people are saying, oh, get rid of the, you know, the exception, the exception that Major League Baseball has. What's that? The antitrust exemption. But the other sports teams don't have that, and they do the same shit. So I don't actually think that's important. So can you tell us a little bit more about the municipal bonds thing?
I will do my best. In broad strokes, about 100 years ago, the federal government passed a law that exempted municipal bonds that states and local governments could take out from interest payments, I believe. So
for investors, right? You sell bonds.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so the idea was that this would incentivize local governments to build public infrastructure. And so it was like for parks, roads, big projects that they would never been able to pay for on their own. They would never been able to make those interest payments on their own. This was a way of the federal government saying, here, you can do this and it will be tax exempt for you guys. The intent of that exemption was not to fund stadium construction. It was not to fund exactly private infrastructure projects or private construction projects, especially not for projects that proved extremely privately valuable at extreme public costs, right? Fast forward to 1986 with the Tax Reform Act. Congress tries to eliminate this practice of states using tax-exempt municipal bonds for private projects. They went 90% of the way, but for some reason didn't go all the way. They left a loophole. They said that you cannot use these bonds, or you can only use these bonds on projects for which no more than 10% of the revenues derived from the project can be used to pay them off. So it was basic, you know, before in the 1960s and whatnot, when cities and states built totally publicly funded stadiums, they used these bonds and they used project revenues to make their payments, right? Now in 1986, they were like, no, you can't use those. You cannot use revenues from the project to pay off the bonds. The idea was no city or state, no local government would be insane enough to say, no, we're going to, you know, take on all that cost ourselves, and we're not going to use project revenues. We're going to pay for it by other means, tax increases out of the general fund, et cetera, et cetera. They wildly underestimated how silly, let's say, these local governments could be, or possibly they overestimated the hold that already professional sports had over cities and states, specifically the hold that the threat of relocation had over them, because cities and states accepted this price wholesale. And so what you're suggesting and what has been attempted several times in Congress, including recently by President Obama in 2016, is just simply closing the loophole and saying you cannot use these bonds for any kind of private project or for stadium projects in general, full stop. That would, you know, that would likely, hopefully, dissuade cities and states from doing this. The state of Congress right now is such that I'm not sure we can rely on any bill being passed. But yeah, that is a long and probably, you know, inarticulate way of describing that.
I think it was great. I think just to like make it clear, the when we say that bonds are tax free, it just means that, like, so, you know, a city, so like for instance, Clark County is going to take out a bunch of bonds to pay for the stadium, the new stadium, and then they're going to have to pay them off, private bondholders in the private market will buy them, and that way Clark County will get money to build, help the A's, to give money to the A's to help them build the stadium. Yeah. When it's tax-free, it means that those bondholders, the private citizens who buy them, don't have to pay tax on the interest that they get, which means that they charge a smaller interest rate, which means like that the cities, you know, are able to invest at like, you know, a lower cost. And you know, it's sort of like giving a cigarette to somebody who's trying to quit smoking. You know, it's like cut them off.
Yeah, exactly.
One question I kind of have for you is, like, I feel like you've been this sort of long form chronicler of a lot of this. You know, there's a few different chroniclers. There's, Brody and Casey on YouTube. There's the documentary. Have you thought about either this topic itself or, you know, stadiums in general? Have you thought about making this an even longer term project, like writing a book or doing, you
Write
know, starting to follow
the book, then.
other cases of this as it happens across the country? Or
Yeah, 100%. I would love to do that one day, and I think that there is that it warrants that, right? And honestly, I think there's a few different book length or documentary length things here, right? There's the relocation of the A's and the disintegration of the Howard Terminal project. I think, as Tim Kaun put it in ESPN in his great piece last year, that warrants a book on late stage capitalism. It's that's perfect right there. There's the story of what happened to Oakland, and which story, by the way, includes the forward looking sort of final denouement, which is the future of sports here, which is that part of the story is being written right now by the Roots and the Ballers, and we'll see what happens down the road, even with possible expansion teams and whatnot. And then, as you alluded to, this story is both emblematic of and an important piece of context for an even bigger story of our relationship to sports as taxpayers and as fans, and how that's evolved over time, and how maybe that's going to change in the future. All that is in the plans. If there are any agents or publishers listening, I'm ready. No, I'm slowly toiling away on something like that in the background, but it's hard, like that.
It's a lot. I
That's a
can't
lot
imagine
of
that's easy.
Yeah, it's a lot of
work.
work. Yeah. There's no
Yeah.
time for that. Yeah, it's hard to even find time for that. So, all right, man. Well, we know you got to get out of here. Thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. Make sure to go check out those two pieces by Dan Moore. One just came out in the Atlantic. It's called Stadium Subsidies Are, oh, Taxpayers Are About to Subsidize a Lot More Than States Sports Stadiums. And then the other one in the Ringer is called When Fans Fight Back. Make sure to go check them out. So, all right. Thank you so much, Dan. Really appreciate your time, man.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks, Dan.
All right. Me and Hal are back to chop it up. Thanks again to Dan Moore for that interview. Really insightful. I know it got a little technical there with all the municipal bonds and stuff, but it was good to learn. It was really good to learn him, to hear from him kind of break that down. I know I kind of got in the weeds there, but that was good explanation. Like, what did you take away from that? Like, I don't know. I still feel like, fans are waking up, or I don't know. There's like a different awareness, you know?
Yeah, and I think, I think it's going to be government by government. So, you see that partly, I think, in Illinois, where it seems like the mayor of Chicago is really excited about giving tons of money away to the
Yeah.
Bears and the White Sox. And the governor is like,
Yeah. Wasn't
you
there a
sure
quote
about
from some?
that? You sure about that?
Wasn't there a quote that came out for somebody's like, oh, this is basically essentially it's a free stadium. Like, didn't somebody, I forget who said it, but it was like, I think it was a politician who said it. It was like, oh, this is a free stadium, guys. And then people were like, no, it's not. It's like
No, it's
$2 billion
not.
of our money. What are you talking about?
No,
You
it's
know?
not.
Yeah, it makes no
Well, they
sense.
always say that, right? So they all like the grift is they bring in a consultant. The consultant says this is going to create so much economic opportunity that
Jeremy Aguirre.
your coffers are going to be bursting with money, and you'll use a fraction of that to pay back these bonds.
It
Yeah,
doesn't
and
really
so
work
I
out
think
that
people
way,
are
right?
pushing back. We
Yeah.
saw a pushback. We saw a pushback with the voters in Missouri, with the Royals and Chiefs. Although, then you see Kansas. The Kansas legislature is ready to bend backwards to grab both of them. Which, if you're a Missouri taxpayer, you're just like, great, I get to keep the team. It's I just have to drive to Kansas. Fine,
Yeah.
I get to keep the team. I don't have to pay for it. But you saw that in Virginia recently with the Wizards and the Capitals. They were like all set to move to Virginia, and Democratic People in the sort of in the legislature, the governor wanted it. People in the legislature said, "Nah, we're not going to do this," and they killed that bill. And now maybe DC is going to end up paying them a bunch of money to stay. So, I mean, I think that there's always another sucker. Teams are always finding another sucker, but it definitely seems like the message has gotten through to some committed public servants. And I think it depends on the place. In my mind, it's these places that call themselves really business friendly. In a lot of ways they are really business friendly, but in a lot of ways they're just billionaire friendly. So
No regulations.
it's good to be business friendly, it's bad to be billionaire friendly. So
Well, I think also like eventually, so like the White Sox, I guess their owner Reinsdorf, he's the rumblings just one I've seen on the periphery. I'm not close to that situation. It's just that they're trying to move to Nashville, right? Like that's like their move, or that's like their Vegas or whatever, right? That's what they're threatening with, right?
I
So.
think so, and partly that partly makes me think that expansion in Major League Baseball may never happen, because there's always going to be a team that tells the MLB front office, "Well, you can't take Nashville because I might want to move there."
And also, like, I think, don't you think they're eventually going to run out of cities? Like, you can't keep doing this forever. I mean, Vegas is already 40th, what, 40th TV market, right? Like, that's already kind of scraping, I feel like, like, is Portland or Nashville, like Salt Lake City, like, these cities, but eventually, what are you going to go to Billings, Montana? Like, what are you gonna,
Well,
like, where does it stop,
the difference between city number one, which is like New York, and city number five, which might be Philadelphia or something, is really big, right? Like New York is three or four times as big as Philadelphia. But the difference between 40 and 45 is like kind of a rounding error. So, when you say, "Oh, Las Vegas is really far down there," yeah, but they're not that much different than Milwaukee, So, yeah, it's not that much different than Portland. And I think especially with the changes in population,
Yeah, people are moving,
where
yeah.
I think, like, in fact, a lot of places that have refused to build or have been in the Rust Belt, your places like, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh and Cleveland, and Milwaukee, and maybe they wouldn't be first in line to get a stadium now, or a team now. And places like Oakland in the Bay Area, where, business is booming, but government refuses to allow new housing, so populations are stagnant. There are new places where people are moving to, and that's, in the South generally. Your San Antonio's, your Austin's, your Nashville's,
Even
your
Sacramento, right?
Charlotte's.
I mean, we're seeing it with Sacramento, right? Like,
Char
I
yeah,
think, yeah, people are
Sacramento.
going from the Bay Area up to Sacramento,
Right,
right? Like,
Sacramento's been willing to build, and that's why Sacramento's on the table for a team. I think they'll. I don't know if Sacramento will be down to pay for a new stadium. They were to help pay a lot for the Kings Stadium. So, we'll see. I think I talked to a Kings or a Raiders and Kings fan a couple months ago. And I was actually in Montana, and this guy's like, "Oh, I'm also from California." And I was like, "Oh, where's Sacramento?" So I started talking about sports, and he says, "Oh, well, I'm a Raiders fan, but now I go to the Las Vegas, and it's fine." And I say, "Oh, that's, and he said, "Well, Sacramento's smart. We used public money to build that basketball stadium, and it's completely revitalized the city." And in my mind, I'm like, "Well, I think the fact that you built a ton of new housing, and people got priced out of the Bay Area, all was this long sort of a situation where a ton of people just moved to Sacramento. I don't think it was because the Kings built a stadium there, but That's the story, I think, or a lot of people tell themselves that's the story in Sacramento. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Sacramento, if Vivek goes to Sacramento Council and says, build us a stadium, or, East Sacramento wants to get on the map and they build a stadium there. So, I'll say this, I know that I think that we have two sort of different viewpoints about this, but I would view long term, if the A's end up getting sold and stay in Sacramento, I would view that as, a victory for A's fans. It not a full victory, maybe a bitter victory, but A's fans made it ex are making it extremely hard for the A's to do business in Las Vegas. They've made John Fisher look like the fucking tool that he is, and that can't, like, the all the bad publicity can't be helping him find investors. It also can't be, all that $200,000 that we invested with Schools Over Stadiums. That lawsuit, not the lawsuit over the referendum, but the other lawsuit that they have trying to overturn it. That has to be weighing on some investors' minds, like, who are serious, thinking, am I going to give a bunch of money to John Fisher right now, knowing that, oh, that public money might disappear because of this lawsuit? There's all these things that we've been doing. If this, and a little bit, I'm worried that once the A's move to Sacramento next year, that, like, sort of nobody will be fighting anymore. No one will care. People will say it's gone. But, it's the fight, in my mind, isn't over until either they're putting shovels in the ground in Las Vegas or John Fisher's forced to sell. And, moving temporarily to a stadium in Sacramento is not either of those two things. So, with that being said, you were able to go to the soccer game of the
The stadium he
century,
did build. Yeah, the stadium
the stadium that Cavill built.
Yeah, I went to
For
PayPal Park. Yeah, that was
Tell us all about that.
No, it was fun. So that was Tuesday night. So there's a competition called the US Open Cup. It's like literally, I think like literally any team can enter it or something. Like in the 30s, there was like a famous, it's called El Farolito, this soccer club for a Mexican restaurant in the Mission. They won the whole thing. But most of the time
Also
MLS
in the
clubs and stuff
90s,
like
they won
that.
it in the 90s, I
Yeah, it was like
think.
in 93 or 94 or something like that.
Yeah. I love Farlito. I used to get burritos there all the time.
So actually I think the Roos just played them actually like last
They
week, 2 weeks
did. In
ago.
the prior round, they
Yeah, in
beat
a close game, but
Farlito.
they won. But so the Roos were playing the Quakes, and I thought there was gonna be more people, I thought it was gonna be like the whole stadium's gonna be sold out. But then I was thinking it's Tuesday night and this open thing that was just announced a few weeks ago. So I don't know what the attendance was. I'm assuming it's probably like 4 or 5 thousand, something like that. But so I rode on the bus with the 68s and hometown hooligans. There's a million different fan groups. But basically the diehard Roots supporters. They got a bus from the Outlandish Warehouse in West Oakland down to San Jose for the park. And it was super fun. Like it was a great time. The moment that stuck out to me the most was so they lost. The Quakes won 1-0 in the 77th minute. But it was after the game for like 20 or 30 minutes after the game that they just stayed there with their drums just chanting. And it's just like this intimidating, I don't know, this Oakland, I don't know, there's like this with the
There
drums, it
wasn't
just
anybody
it's
for the Quakes doing that, was there?
no, I mean, no, so during the game there was, I
There
mean,
was, yeah.
but definitely there was, I would say the supporter group, the supporter section of the Roots was outnumbered the Quake section. Like the Quake section, there was a group of maybe like six or seven drummers. And I interviewed them too. I have a video on YouTube. And it was it, and but the Roots, there was probably like over, I would say maybe like 100 people. Like there was like a full section, and it was just kind of weird. There was like security guards just kind of scoping it out the whole time, and they wouldn't let us out of the building. I was like, dude, what? I'm like, what do you guys think? We think we're in Europe, like England or something? It's like, dude,
Just
we're in freaking San
some
Jose, like,
traditional
dude.
soccer hooligan shit.
Yeah, like there's like a strip
What
mall. There's yeah, I don't know.
were most of the fans Quakes fans at the stadium?
I would say like around the rest of the stadium, yeah, it was mostly Quakes fans, and then all the Roots fans were really concentrated in this one section. And it was just fun. Like it's cool to see that spirit is still alive. Like obviously And then I went to the A's doubleheader yesterday, and it's just like right field Will out there with a couple other people. Like, it's just not the same. But just to know that that energy still lives, you know, like to see that again and to hear the Let's Go Oakland chants and all the chants are just about Oakland. It's like there's so much pride, you know, and it's cool to see that what the Roots are doing. You know, I really, it was a really fun thing. Even though they lost, like, it was still super fun. And
Were the Quakes fans ever sort of joining in on the sell the team or the fuck John Fisher chants or?
I don't know. I'm honestly, I was literally sitting in the section, so I couldn't, and they were so loud. Like, I just have to say, like, props to the Roots fans. They were so freaking loud. Like, I was down on the field and they were like just as loud as the Quakes fans I was next to, you know? Like, you could really hear them down there. But no, so I couldn't really tell if it was going around, but I interviewed a few Quakes fans, and one
What
dude
they have
was
to
like, yeah,
say.
he's an idiot, he should sell the team. And another dude was really thoughtful. He had some really good it was really good. His name was Jared, and I was asking about, like, you know, have you guys signed free agents? He's like, basically, we signed this one guy for $7 million, and that's pretty much like the biggest investment he's made. Because, you know, they built that stadium 10 years ago, and they're still bottom of the barrel in free agency. They're in last place right now in the West. I guess Fisher recently complained about that stadium, but I liked it. It was a nice stadium. Like, it was beautiful. Like, it's pretty simple. Like, you know, like, it's simple, but it's cool. Like, it's a great place to watch a game. All the seats are really close. It's basically just one big grandstand that wraps around the whole thing.
It's a soccer stadium, man. It's good at what it does. Yeah, you don't have the, you know, maybe the newest, you know, the newest stadium fad thing just because it's 10 years old. But, you know, and some other team has built a stadium last year. But like, you gotta fill it, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I
cool for what
think
it is. Yeah, I mean, there's like plenty of, like, restrooms, and like the food is fine. It's like the concourses are big. One thing I noticed is, like, it's just big, basic open walls. So it's like you have the grandstand, then it's just basically open walls, but you're in San Jose. So, I mean, it's a really moderate climate. Like, you don't really, you know, so yeah. So I don't know, but I don't know what he would try to upgrade. Maybe get cooler scoreboards or something like that. But I mean, it's fine, dude. Like, it's fine how it is, you know? Like,
It, you know,
it's
it
a cool,
just
it's a
it
beautiful place to
doesn't
watch a game. Yeah.
it's
It's
you know,
along the
and
lines of,
also it's you know, also it's MLS, so there's like kind of a salary cap, so you know, it's not like you can go out and go crazy with your spending, but I don't know, man. I mean, maybe they've just had a ton of bad luck, but I kind of just think maybe John Fisher's a fucking idiot.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what he said. He's like, there's no mistake that, you know, this team is run managed this way and the A's are managed the same way. Like, you see what the results are. Like, you know, like, that it's no secret, you know, like why it's like
It's
this.
no
So
secret. He's an idiot. And what was I gonna say? You know, I don't even remember now, but
But no, it was cool, man.
boy.
Yeah, but I mean, it goes along with, like, kind of like the grips, like, you know, of him saying, oh, we need to upgrade the stadium. It's like they're just always looking for more, dude, you know. They're just always looking for more, and this is just going to keep on happening, you know. So as long as people are kind of waking up and pushing back, I think that's the most important thing, you know. But
Yeah, I think so too. You know, and there's still some exciting things on the horizon. We have the Bees opening day, June 4th, I want to
yeah,
say.
June 4th. Yeah, then June
Yeah,
7th is the
I
reverse
gotta make a
boycott.
plan if I want to be there for that or not. But June 7th is reverse boycott, which is also a Bees game. So you know, it's going up doubleheader, but I think there'll be some more news I'm hearing about how the 68s are going to treat that, maybe encouraging people to start at the A's game and end at the B's game. But that could be kind of like a
That would
fun
be wild.
night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be a fun night, you know.
Yeah, June 8th. Yeah, June 8th, 68th day. Yeah. So that would be wild.
Yeah, and you know, it just we'll see how this goes. I just, if you're still listening to this podcast, you know, you started this episode and you're still listening to it, you know, you're a committed person, so you know, stay committed to the fight. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think I really think that there's going to be some fun stuff,
Yeah,
especially
the
with the
story is,
bees.
it's gonna keep going, man. The story's gonna keep going for sure. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, I really hope Dan I really hope Dan writes his book one day, man. I think
I
that would
know,
be
dude. He's
cool.
a great writer. Like I told you, he
He's
uses
a great
great
writer,
verbs.
yeah.
Great verbs, dude. He uses great
That's
verbs. Like me and
the
Hal were talking. I was like, dude,
key.
Dan's such a good writer. He uses such good verbs. And
It's
Hal's
the
like,
key.
what
You just gotta
the
use
fuck?
verbs, man.
Dude, his verbs are top notch.
Yeah, I think it would be even if, you know, he's right. He could take it in a bunch of ways. It could be cool if he does like a national thing. I think even like, you know, maybe embedding himself with the, or I don't even know how you embed yourself, but you know, like trying to follow something like in Chicago or other places just to compare all this, like this entire graft and nonsense. But
Yeah, selfishly, I'd love to see the
it's
Howard Terminal Vegas book. I would love to see that book. So,
yeah. I mean,
and
you
that's,
know,
I mean, that, yeah.
a lot has been written. I think ultimately the thing that hasn't been written and heard from is the view from inside the A's organization. And I don't think that will ever really be John Fisher or Dave Cavill, at least, you know, honestly. But you know, I think if you're thinking about like a book and, you know, exciting things, like you just love to get somebody who was in some of these meetings and who, you know, who watched the honest reaction to some of these guys. Because, you know, yeah, that you know, that interview with the Bally's guy this week where he said, oh, you know, as soon as I started talking to Fisher, they said that they were very serious about Las Vegas. It's like, well, you know, this Bally guy wants to make himself like he's smart, look like he's smart, you know? And that's sort of the way to look like, whoa,
Whoa,
what
what just
happened?
happened? So,
We're sorry, people,
how come I can't do
people,
it?
sorry, people who are listening to this podcast, I just sat back in my chair and put my thumb up, like, you know, I was counting. This is the first thing. And this little air bubble on Zoom came up with a thumb emoji. It's like, I don't know how they did
I don't know.
that. But anyway,
Anyways.
so the first, sorry. That was very strange. Okay, so you know, the first thing is first is that, you know, he's trying to make himself so smart. Second thing is, you know, Dave Cavill's a liar anyway. So whatever, right? Dave Cavill's gonna tell him whatever. You know, and you know, third, like who, you know, who fucking knows? Who knows like what was actually happening? I believe that there was a time that they tried to make Howard Terminal
Me
work.
too.
But you know, I also believe that there was a time that was probably significantly before you know, March of 2023 that the A's decided, no, it's Vegas or nothing. And I think that they really strung people
Well, dude, it
around
was
and
that
jerked
day. I
people
don't
around
remember.
for
I
a
think
while.
I want to say it was May 21 when Dave Cavill was at that Vegas Golden Knights game. It was the same time while the A's were playing, and he sent out a photo. He's like, "Oh man, check out this playoff atmosphere in Vegas." And that was like the that was when it like all started to change. That's when Cavill started to become the bad guy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, June 20, these dates are I'm not really sure about any of them, but like I
Yeah, it all
think
runs
that
together.
what was it, June or July or something of 2022, when they wanted to have that non-binding agreement with the city that was all on their terms. And that was the, you know, that basically just, you know, where they wrote sort of how they wrote the bill in Las Vegas and in Nevada and got it passed. Well, they wrote their own bill in Oakland, and you know, the city council's like,
Yeah, we need more
what are you
time.
doing?
Like,
Like,
yeah, we need
this
more.
is
Like,
our, no. They were like, listen, this is our job. We write the bills. You follow the law. We write the law. You follow the law. And so, you know, I think at that point, I remember the night before then, or the day, or the maybe the morning before then. An interview with Dave Cavill, either with Casey or with the other guy on ABC, and Dave Cavill was saying, it's, you know, this is do or die, you know, this is Howard Terminal or bust, you have to do it our way, this is the thing. And I was just thinking, like, dude, like, they're going to figure out how to get there, but it's maybe not going to be exactly the way you want it. And it just seemed really, you know, I think when the story is finally written, I think that they'll say like that was the moment where the A's, I think, just maybe put up something that they knew was not going to pass, you know, and then they, but.
Well, yeah, because I think it was like 2022 before they went into their August recess. The A's were trying really, really hard to get something done because they figured,
Yeah,
oh, once
yeah.
the recess comes and then it's like a new election
That's right.
cycle, we're
That's
screwed.
right.
So, yeah, I remember Cavill saying, oh, this is, and I was
This
thinking,
is
like,
it.
dude, I was like, but dude, you're like, this is Oakland we're talking about here. Like, this is not going to happen, you know? So, but
Well, you know, I mean, you know, oh boy. Anyway, I it's a bummer. We sort of also wanted to get somebody from the Earthquakes on here to talk about the game before the game. But
Honestly, there were some
some
fans too.
people are not as some people are not as willing to trash you know, John Fisher
Well,
in
they didn't
public
even have to trash
as
him. Like,
they should.
even if they like the guy, I would love to hear why he likes the guy. Like, I would just love to have somebody on. And there were
Yeah,
some fans
we tried to
too.
connect with some Quakes podcasters and they were like, we don't talk about John Fisher on the podcast. We're like, what a bunch of pussies.
And
You're gonna
there
lose your
was.
fucking team. You
Yeah, there was one fan too. I was trying to get him to talk on camera about how he was like diehard Quakes fan, and I was like,
Yeah.
off the camera, he was talking about John Fisher. I was like, okay, can you say anything on the camera? He's like, oh, I don't want to say anything because, you know, it's like, you know,
People
there.
are so
I
scared,
think he might
man.
have been part of the actual supporters club or whatever, so he didn't want to talk shit. But I was like, dude, come on, like, just come on, like, yeah. So I
Come
tried
on.
to. You know, some people were unwilling to even if it was positive, I just want to hear what people think about the guy. But some people were just
Well,
not even willing to
I
talk
also
about it.
understand people like don't want to be on the internet and don't
Yeah,
know what
yeah.
you're gonna do with it. But
Yeah.
yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll have some people from the Ballers on coming up with that team.
No, absolutely. Yeah, we gotta have
The A's for a while there seemed like that they were on a roll.
Yeah, they were. They were on a heater. They won five in a row or six in a
Yeah,
row.
but
Yeah, that was,
then they
yeah.
just lost 3 of 4 to the Rangers.
Marcus
So
Semien coming back to haunt him.
yeah, you know, and frankly, it seems like the A's are not going to be as bad as they were last year, but they're not
No,
going to
I
make the
mean, no, their
playoffs or
bullpen's
anything.
legit. Like, Mason Miller is still amazing. Like, he's
No.
gonna be their all-star, I'm pretty sure. And
Oh yeah.
So.
So.
No, it was cool. It was really exciting there for a couple. I'm still intrigued watching. I like watching. They're fun, entertaining team to watch, if anything, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. I don't know if you saw the news too of that. Somebody had like collected every single professional or college team in North America that or it, maybe not North America, in the US that has better attendance than the Oakland A's.
Oh God, is it a
And
long list or
there was
what?
a very long list. So the A's attendance has been stinky, stinky poo-poo. And I think much worse than last year, which, you know, is
No,
not
yeah,
surprising.
absolutely. Yeah. Last year was around 10,000. I think this year it's around like six or something like that, I think.
I
Yeah.
think last year was like, yeah, it was like 10 or 12 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's,
So
yeah, I was at the
it's gonna
doubleheader.
be.
Yeah. Last doubleheader in Oakland history yesterday. They split them, but, it was fun. By the end of the day, I was ready to go home. I gotta say, I was pretty tired. But yeah, it was fun. It was pretty fun.
Pretty tired of being one of very few people watching baseball, but
Yeah, it was fun.
yeah. All right. Well,
All right, Hal. Well, we'll talk soon.
yeah. Sleep well, Oakland.